The firm of Harris and Meringue. Not ambulance chasing, but plenty of rides in one.
From the hips down, man, it's a disaster.
The firm. Patrick Harris.
And someone crashed their car on the I-5 bridge.
Danny Meringue.
I've had some bad runs.
On the Fan Sports Network, 105.1 and 1080, The Fan.
Welcome into hour number two of The Firm here. You're missing the first hour. You can download that, The Fan Podcast, at 1051thefan.com, right? 1051thefan.com?
Yes.
All right.
I switched it yesterday.
Okay, great. 1051thefan.com, the Odyssey app, wherever you get your podcasts. I think we are ready to go. Oh, baby.
This will already put Strider over 50 pitches here.
Nope. That's a Will Ortner misfire. Yeah. Those two cool drops that Will Ortner had for us, the U and the I Just Get Tired, were saved in the primetime area.
Mm.
So now they have been saved over. Pretty much.
Opening day, and here's the first pitch, and the season's over.
That's how it feels sometimes. That's how it feels sometimes. Tyson Alger coming up here in about 10, 15 minutes. Excited to talk to him. A little bit of NFL news and notes, some cleanup duty to say here. Brian Daboll has announced the starting quarterback for the New York Giants.
Hit me.
Let's ride.
Clearly, y'all don't listen to my darn updates.
I did.
I always listen. The Fan.
Yeah, no, we know.
First on the Fan. Dude, I loved updates. Yeah. It's my favorite part about being a producer.
You're just trying to shine.
Just the nepotism, but what's the word I'm looking for?
I don't know. You lost me in nepotism.
I know, dude. It totally threw me
Daddy?
Off, dude. It's just the selfishness of me.
Oh, there you go.
The narcissist in me. That's what I was looking for. The narcissist in me. I love updates because it's my turn to talk.
Great, you went nepotism and not narco. Was it not
narcolepsy?
Yeah.
What are we doing here? Uncomfortable word of the day?
Yeah.
That's Friday, although narco doesn't make me young.
My sister said her boyfriend at the time, now her husband, this guy, I love him to death. We saw Avengers in the theater.
The first one?
Yeah. This is how long ago this was. He fell asleep like during the fight scene in New York City.
That's not good.
And I was like, how are you? How? And she meant to say narcoleptic, but she said necrophiliac. Like, yeah, my boyfriend's such a necrophiliac, and I just snapped at him like, come again? She's like, yeah, no, he's a necrophiliac. I go, no.
I don't think that means what you think it means.
I go, no. And she's like, oh, no, narcoleptic. Again, my sister has a degree in nursing, so it was a bit of a medical terminology. Maybe we should circle back on that one. That one's not a good one to land on.
Yeah, is this the beginning of terminology for Brian Daboll? Quote, these guys will be out here competing, but Russ is our starter for like what, two games?
I'll give him three.
Three games?
Three, maybe four,
and then Dart comes in.
I think three and a half's probably the line. Because Daboll and I'm totally blanking on the GM's name, Shane, they're on the hot seat.
Big time.
They are on the hot seat. And they moved up and they got Dart, and that was their guy. Remember, he was like, oh, maybe they go Shador. It's like, no. They want the big quarterback they can trust. And they go and get Dart. I don't think they can, for their own jobs, I don't think they can hold on.
Yeah, if things start sliding and you put the kid in, if you put the kid in and he has some shine and you might buy yourself another year. Yeah. But I worry that they already bought themselves a year.
They probably did.
And because the front office is like, we'll take Dart and we'll start from scratch next year if we have to, no matter what.
I don't know if that patience is there, man, because that hard knocks on the Giants showing inside that front office and Saquon and Daniel Jones, I don't know how you come back from that unless Dart is an absolute stud.
Which I don't see.
I think Dart's
from the jump,
good.
I don't see it.
Not from the jump. I think Dart's going to be a good quarterback.
I think he could be a good quarterback. I don't see it from the jump. That team's got too many issues.
Well, I mean, that's the problem. It's not just a quarterback issue. It's a bleh.
Yeah.
Like, the entirety of that roster just doesn't make any sense. But, hey, Malik Nabers is back, and he's healthy.
Daniel Jones. I love Malik Nabers.
Oh, yeah. No, he's...
Top five wide receiver in the NFL.
Is
that what they called him?
Pretty damn good.
He's good.
Pretty damn good.
Big guys. You know me. I like big guys.
Hey, speaking of big guys... How about some big guys holding out and their owners just getting absolutely sideways?
Dude, this is what's so scary. Jayden Daniels has this quote, it's just business in the NFL, when talking about Terry McLaurin and holding out as a wide receiver for the Washington Commanders. I agree. It is just business, but this is where it gets scary for some teams. Like, the Commanders are on the up and up. They are a sexy team to pick this year. Hell, they were in the NFC Championship last year. Like, this team has high aspirations. Year two of Jane Daniels, who, by all accounts, looks like the real deal.
Yep.
100% wrong on that. Willing to eat crow on that. 100% wrong on that. This is where I always think things get a little dicey, is when you start to see that progress and you're about to make that jump, and now everybody wants theirs. Everybody's kind of like, well, where's mine? Damn, Rafi Devers just hit his second dinger. Of the game.
Yeah, he's doing fine.
Hello.
But as it pertains to the Commanders and McLaurin, Bobby Wagner was kind of asked about it. I think he has the best line possible. Speaking of business, it's business, and some of the business is not your business.
Mm.
You don't pocket watch. Can't do it. Cannot do it. You let
pocket watch. Define that. What do you mean?
You can't look at what somebody else's money is. You can't talk about anybody else's money. Their money is their money. Your money is your money. If they're going to hold out, you go. You handle your business. And we'll see you when you get back. That's how you have to operate as a player. That's 100% in the NFL.
You can't. It's not worth your. You don't have the bandwidth.
Just that. It's you don't do it. You don't. You don't. You don't worry about what somebody else is getting paid. You worried about what you are getting paid. And Bobby Wagner's been around long enough, and he is well-respected.
Well-respected. Like, Bobby Wagner, Hall of Famer?
Yes.
Question mark?
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely. Right. But then you look at, and I think the ownership question, we would obviously, in the past, we'd go, Snyder, what the hell are you doing?
It would be par for the course.
But I think that the Commanders are doing the right thing here and being prudent, because they do need to make sure that their books look right kind of going forward, because you do have a young stud quarterback, and things are looking good for you, and you can't just go full Matt Ishbia and go spend.
Yeah, and you want a new stadium. And look, Magic, minority owner, yeah, but like, that group knows what they're doing when they're building franchises. Look at the Dodgers right now. The Dodgers were kind of middling into nothing, and now they're the best-run organization in baseball.
You might even say sports. It's insane how that sounds.
And the Commanders are on that path. These, I guess, are your growing pains? Is that kind of what you're saying?
Yep, and I think you just kind of deal with it as you need to deal with it. Now, if this becomes a protracted a holdout, that's a problem. Because the problems, the bigger ones, are when you want to talk about ownership, good God almighty, Jerry Jones and Mike Brown, what are you doing? Shut up, shut up, shut up.
But there's nobody to tell them to shut up.
Good God. Mike Brown's over there with the Bengals talking about, you know, if we wanted this to be just something that just made us money, you know, we would just make money and not spend money. It's like, you've been cheap your entire time.
Yeah.
What do you mean?
And Jerry, dude, I've never seen somebody in my entire life want to re-sign a franchise player, somebody that will be in your ring of honor,
less,
and openly talk trash about them. I've never seen this before. I mean, maybe I haven't. I'm just not remembering it. But it's like, Micah Parsons, hey, he's all right. It's like, bro, you trying to sign this dude? If I'm Micah, I'm out.
I mean, his comments are pretty much echoing that. If him and Trey Henderson
all hit the free agency.
Did you see that the Bengals would only put guarantees in 1 year for Trey Henderson? And he's like... He was like, this is laughable.
Yeah.
Like, are you out of your mind?
I'm not even offended. This is just hilarious, like, at this point.
What are you... And the thing with Jerry is Jerry has his guys, and it very much looks like Micah's not one of his guys, because he paid Zeke, he paid CeeDee, he paid Dak, and it's like...
Twice.
Micah's the guy you
Micah's
pay!
Micah's the guy. He's the guy right now. He's the best foot forward for your future, and you're out here talking about he could get in a car crash tomorrow, and, he's had some injuries, and, you know, I don't know if he's worth that much money, and... Having free agent negotiations in public is just some of the dumbest things you can ever choose to do. Yet nobody learns from that mistake.
And it's just, and the funny thing is, what ends up happening to the Cowboys every single time? They pay.
They pay the guy too late and wind up having to pay him a few million dollars more a year than they need to.
No, because the Cardinals didn't.
Well, I know, but that's what I mean. Yeah. This is what it's like. It's like extending Robbie Cano for 8 years and he gets popped for steroids.
Yeah, it's like, oops. Look, man, look, I understand that, like, I am not pro-owner almost in any instance. I understand the prudence of deals when guys are getting older.
Sure.
That I get that.
And I also get the NFL. We talked about this a little bit the other day. 3.5-year window. You got to get your money. It's all about that second contract. It's all about that second contract, and so I get it. But the reality is owners are never going to value you the way you actually should be valued. And we're seeing that. If Micah Parsons and Henriksen can't get deals, that you're never going to get market value unless you're a quarterback. You're just not.
Unless you're, but the thing
and
is,
that's like, the only one that gets overpaid.
And the thing is, like, you say that, you know, unless they're one of them ones. But the problem is, Trey Hendrickson and Micah Parsons are one of them ones.
I agree.
Like, that's,
but they don't hold on to the football 90% of the time.
Somebody will pay them.
And they'll be happier there, probably. Would you be happy? If Hendrickson takes a little bit less money and goes to the Eagles?
He said he was going to take, he's open to taking
know,
less money.
I know, his he said
house,
that too.
His house overlooks the practice facility.
He said that too.
He had to leave his house. And I think he said he went down to Jacksonville. Diana Rossini had a on-the-record sit-down with him. Shout out, Diana. And he was like, yeah, I had to go down to Jacksonville because I couldn't hear the whistles. Because like the practice facility is like right there. Like,
oh yeah, you just couldn't.
I couldn't be around it. I can't let the other 10 guys. I can't impact that. He's like, he felt bad about what he did at training
camp.
He's
playing the cards all the right way.
Yeah, he's a guy that wants to play for your crappy organization. You don't have many dudes who are like, no, I want to be a Bengal.
You don't. You really do.
You know what I mean? It's like, oh God, dude. And he's been so good. It's just like, just figure something out, my God.
All right, we come back. We'll have Tyson Alger from the I-5 Corridor on. We'll chat with him about the Ducks this coming up season. Do you like that? Did you like that? The firm of Harrison Morang on 1080 The Fan and 105.1 FM. Finally did it.
Loser.
Dan Lanning hits the podium today around 12:15. We'll have that for you live. We'll cut into that for you. But joining us now, Tyson Alger of the I-5 Corridor. Tyson, we're very happy to have you. You are the first guest on the firm of Harrison Morang and also our first guest on FM radio. Congratulations. You are the greatest.
I wasn't prepared for this, guys. I would have maybe come with a speech or like a gift for you all, but I feel very honored that this voice gets to be on those crystal clear FM airwaves. I'm touched.
You sound fantastic in my headphones right now, so that's great. What are you working on these days? How's I-5 Corridor going?
It's going good, man. Like I made the mistake of being a sports writer is a great gig because you cover like college football from September, August through January, and then it's kind of off season, right? Mm. Like you kind of get, you know, you got to do a little bit of recruiting, a little bit of spring football, but other than that, it's pretty leisurely. But I was really smart and I decided to start covering MLS soccer in the off season. Mm. Turns out those seasons run completely opposite of each other. So
now you're full time.
yes. I have somehow dropped myself into a full-time role, and I am hating it.
Nothing quite like a 94th-minute goal on a deadline, right?
I sent my editor at the time a couple of choice words. it's like ultimately it makes the story better, right? But like the graveyard of soccer stories that I've written where like an 89th goal ruins the whole thing is growing at this point.
The Wednesday night at 9:30. You got to change everything.
It's just for the love of the grind, boys.
That's why we all do it. Let's get into Ducks preview as Lanning's going to take the stage today. I'll start right there real quickly. Anything you expect from Lanning today outside of the normal, hi, we're here to compete for national championships, blah, blah, blah?
No, I think you're going to get a lot of kind of cliches. I think you're going to get a lot of just kind of Dan Lanning answers. I just finished up with him for 15 minutes here one-on-one, and you know, I've been covering Dan for, this will be the fourth season now. That's as long as I've covered any coach. And he's still at this time, he's still a guy who actually keeps his cards close to the vest, guys. Like, he's kind of a tough cookie to crack when it comes. It's like, do I talk to him a lot about football and have him avoid all the answers? Or do I bring a bunch of silly questions and have him think I'm not serious? There's really a needle and thread that you have to thread there. But I think you're probably going to hear him talk a fair amount about NIL. You're going to hear him talk a fair amount about the house settlement stuff. And there's probably just going to be a lot of, like, can you guys climb the hill again? I'm sure we're going to hear some thoughts on the Rose Bowl from last year and how this is a different season and a different team, but we're trying to continue. And, you know, it's media days. I don't think Dan's planning on coming out here and really making headlines quite like they did last year when they brought the Duck. I've been in Vegas for 24 hours. I haven't seen anything inflatable yet. So
no
big surprises yet.
No Signetti quotes from Lanning today?
No, I don't think so. I think Dan Lanning views a media day as a success if he can come in here and leave without anything that he said ending up in a headline.
Well, speaking of the Ducks and kind of the expectations, what is the expectation not only for the Ducks, but just kind of looking at this Big Ten? I don't want to call it a down year, but there's so much transition in the conference. Where do the Ducks kind of fall in all of this? They're clearly loaded on defense, but all of the questions seem to point at the offensive side of the ball. Like, where do you start beyond just, hey, they got to break in a new quarterback?
Yeah, it's such kind of like a weird season to pre-describe for the Ducks, because like ultimately, like if you go through like the history of like Oregon seasons, like this, the amount of talent they have on this roster probably ranks among like their top three or four teams in program history, if not higher. But it's, you're coming off of three Heisman seasons at quarterback. Like, you're graduating a lot of guys off the offensive line. We've seen Oregon be a team that can really like retool through the transfer portal, but like, can you do it yet again? And so like, this is the first season where we've really had some kind of questions about the offense going in. And that can get even further if you want to go into like their depth at wide receiver with Evan Stewart. Like, I know that's going to come up here, but at the same time, like, this isn't the Big Ten last year where there's a clear favorite in Ohio State, or maybe as good as Oregon was last year. You know, like I voted for Penn State as number one in the poll this week just because they have the most experienced quarterback coming back. But, you know, like, there's always surprises. Like, we saw how much of an impact Jeremiah Smith made last year for the Buckeyes. Could DeCorian Moore be that guy for Oregon this year? We still don't know what Dante Moore's ceiling is. So it's one of those seasons where like I expect them to be in like the 10 win window, but like if things kind of hit in the right spots around some of these guys, like they're going to be in the playoff as long as things go well, and it's just a matter of like when do they peak.
You brought up Dante Moore, and I think the general consensus is he's going to be the starter, but it does sound like there's a chance for Novosad to take that job. What does that kind of look like as we get into fall ball and camp really starts ramping up and we're starting to get ready for the season?
Yeah, you know, and that's something that I guarantee you Dan's going to say today in his press conferences. I'm sure he's going to bring up Austin a bunch, and I'm sure he's going to say the battle is going to continue going into fall camp. And I think ultimately it's going to be won by whoever like offers them the most without turning the ball over. Like, that's been the bread and butter of Oregon's offense the last couple of years, is like, yes, you've had some very, very talented quarterbacks, but if you go back and look at the amount of turnovers they produced, like, the Ducks didn't turn the ball over. They're an offense that relies on a system where the quarterback needs to complete passes like 75% of the time. You take the easy money spots, and then, you know, you go for game breakers when they present themselves. And Oregon still got a lot of very good skill guys, even though they're a little less proven. It's just going to be, you know, I think Dante has the higher ceiling. I think the team believes he has the higher ceiling. I think he's going to be the guy. But if Austin Novosad is the type of guy who just is better at getting the ball to the playmakers and not creating havoc for their own team, like, I think he's got the potential to play this year if Dante struggles.
Tyson Alger, the I-5 corridor here, joining us. And I kind of proposed this question to Danny, and I'm curious from your perspective as a writer and somebody who follows this team closely. It's kind of like a half full, half empty outlook. Is the bigger storyline to you the questions on offense or the potentially seventh ranked top five defense in the country? Like, where do you lean more confidently in what the story this year will be?
Oh man, that is a good question, because like if the Ducks don't go 12-0 this year, I think people will probably point more towards the offense than the defense, because like, as you said, like Oregon's defense is going to be so good this year. I just finished talking up with Bryce Betcher. I finished talking up with Mateo Uiagalelei. Like, both those guys are looking big. Like, they're looking strong. Like, they're ready for the season. And, you know, if you go look at that secondary too, they added some awfully good figures or some awfully good players in there. So I think because this is Oregon and we're still trained to follow Oregon as like this crazy offensive team, even though, you know, it's 13 years later at this point from when that was really true, I think we're going to focus on the offense, because it's just a natural storyline of like, hey, Oregon's had two of the most experienced quarterbacks in college football history the last 3 years playing quarterback for them. Now they have something different. Lanning's finally got his guys in. There's a lot of guys that he recruited that have come in. Like, how does this look? How does this work? and what type of ceiling do they have?
Yeah, Danny kind of brought this up as well. The thought of, look, Lanning comes as a defensive guy. And now he's got potentially the best defense he's ever had at Oregon. Is this going to be the true identity of Oregon? Is this kind of the true identity of college football now, that you build a defense and your offense is always going to be semi-interchangeable due to the transfer portal?
Yeah, I think the offense is probably a little bit more interchangeable. I mean, just like more so because the offense has like one player, i.e. the quarterback, where you can completely like change your fortunes of the season depending on if you get a good one through the portal or not. I think defense has to have a little bit more of a foundation. I think it has a lot more to do with recruiting. I mean, if you take a look at Oregon's defensive line, like see how much those guys sub in and out during the game, they use a lot of those players. And so, I think it's probably easier to build up and kind of sustain that defense, but, you know, we're going to see a fair amount of Dan Lanning recruited players on the offensive side too, even at like, especially at wide receiver. Like, I think that'll be fascinating. I think it'll be fascinating to see the step Kenyon Sadiq takes at tight end this year. You know, obviously he turned some heads with that hurdle last season, but like, you know, I asked him like, how did that change your life? And he's like, you should have seen my phone afterwards. Like, it's like all of a sudden everybody knows who I am. And that kind of brings like a whole different level of expectations to it. So it's weird. Like this probably isn't going to be as exciting of a season as it was last year from just like a sheer storyline perspective. I mean, they were number one for half the year last year, but from a writing perspective, this is like one of the first years in a while that I've gone into an Oregon season and I don't really know what to expect. Like, I don't know who the storylines are going to be. And that really excites me.
In that same vein, a lot of times, you know, when you have somebody on, you go, what's the best possible outcome? I want to go the other way. What's the worst possible outcome from this team? And what would lead to that situation happening?
Ooh, worst possible outcome would probably be if Dante comes out and he's erratic throwing the ball and they turn the ball over a few times. If there's not a clear leader that emerges at wide receiver. I mean, the Ducks have had some pretty good ones and some pretty reliable ones the last 4 or 5 years between Tez Johnson or Troy Franklin. You know, if the defense happens to struggle on days where the offense isn't perfect either, like, again, like I don't know what the floor is for here. I think there's a base level of talent where you're still going to win a lot of games this season with that schedule, but there are less opportunities for this team to prove themselves this year than there were last year. You have Penn State this year, but other than that, that's really the only marquee game. My worry would be just keeping the overall focus and kind of goals of the team if you're not great from the start, because we really haven't seen the Ducks or Dan Lanning go through like a ton of midseason adversity before. It's always just kind of been that Washington loss at the end, you know? And so it'll be interesting to see if they're not front running, like how they carry themselves through that.
This is Tyson Alger. Thank you for joining us, bud. Don't have too much fun in Vegas.
Never do, boys. Never. I'm a journalist. I don't have enough money to have fun in Vegas. So.
Buddy, Fremont Street exists. I will tell you, I was there just a week ago. You can have a good time very, very inexpensively.
just make sure you have me on next week as a wellness check.
There you go.
Yeah.
Thanks for joining us. Beers on me next time at Lombard House. All right.
Yes, sir. Absolutely. Take care, boys.
Yep. Travel safe. That is Tyson Alger of the I-5 corridor. Make sure to go give him a read. He's just fantastic. We hope to have him on as often as we can this year during the Indeed. Football season. Great guy, local stuff, good content, and just a great dude to chat with. We come back. Some more reactions to Oregon as it's Pac-10. Oh, did you like that?
That's two today.
Is that? Did you
two,
like well, that? It is Big Ten Media
Pac-10
Day.
Pac-10 Media Day here on 1080 The Fan.
For the Ducks, as Lanning will join us at 12:15 from the podium. I got to get out of here. This is the firm of Harrison Meringue, but first there's the Big Kahuna with sports.
I hear they got some tasty burgers.
Web Gems coming up here in 15 minutes. We're kind of moving some stuff around, checking things out, figuring out how this show's going to work. 11:45 might be the new home of Web Gems. Rumor on the street, Tears Day coming back tomorrow.
Dun, 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 dun.
Rumor on the street.
A little probably, summer specialty.
Probably should tease that as something special
baby.
Coming back.
Summer, summer, summertime.
And it may have been sparked by some Pop-Tart takes.
Dude. I want the record to show that I love the guys in the morning. Mm. I am not starting show beef.
I'll start a show beef.
I'm not doing it.
That's part of my problem with this lineup change now is I don't get to go in there and start show beefs right after they sign off. I have to come in here now. Because we used to have a good like 10-15 minute conversation about what beefed me off on my drive in the morning.
Well, now I actually get to see them.
Yeah.
That's the other thing.
I think it's funny that I'm like so happy about this and both of you are so mad.
No, I'm not mad about it. I never got to see those guys.
Yeah, I know.
Because there's a huge time gap.
I said adios, Tyson and Suk. I'll never see them again.
Probably not.
Never see them again. Tyson, we just had Tyson Alger on from the I-5 corridor talking about the Ducks Ducks right before the season starts off. It's today's Big Ten Media Day. We'll have Dan Lanning when he hits the podium at 12:15 right here on 105.1 The Fan. I thought Tyson made a really great point on I have no idea what the floor is for this team.
Yeah, that was why I asked him, is like the
could this team lose four games? Yeah. That when you say I don't know what the floor is, that could be the floor.
I think the one thing you always have to take into context with particularly football is schedule. I thought what Tyson said was really poignant about
he's got like, a friendly one.
They have a good schedule and they don't have as many prove it games. You've got Penn State in Penn State. Beyond that, you get USC at home.
UW on the road, but UW is a giant question mark. I can't wait to talk about it. We might talk about them tomorrow because they hit the podium today, right? It's Jen Fish today.
If you're talking about their tough road games, Penn State, obviously.
Obviously.
Iowa, sure. It's because you're
going to. Iowa.
Well, not only that, you're going to leave that game sore.
Yeah.
Like, that's the thing. And Iowa, for the first time in my lifetime, maybe, has at least a what appears to be a competent quarterback.
But do they have a competent OC?
No. The answer is no. And then UW. But, I mean, they're home games. They get Oregon State at home. They get Indiana at home.
Indiana at home is really nice.
They get Wisconsin at home. Like, their tough games
are at home. Outside of Penn State.
Outside of Penn State and, to an extent, UW.
But you can lose that Penn State game and it's not going to matter.
No. But the home games, then you have to kind of win them all. Like if you're talking about having the higher ceiling season.
I think, yeah, realistic ceiling for this team is one loss going into maybe the Big Ten championship or one loss going into the playoff. That's probably best real case scenario.
Because you'll probably trip up on, if it's not Penn State, you'll probably trip up once against Indiana. I don't want to say Wisconsin, because as much as I like Wisconsin, they've kind of gone away from their identity.
And they've got a brutal schedule.
Yeah, they do. So one of Indiana, USC, UW, throw Iowa in there is the wild card.
Rivalry games are always a wild card,
yeah,
too.
I want to give the Biebs the benefit of the doubt, because they did do it 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
They did. I mean, was it 13 straight plays?
Something like that, yeah.
But their schedule's good. Like, if you look at the other teams that are expected to do well in conference, if you want to take a look at Ohio State, they start the season with Texas. It's like, then they have Illinois on the road and Michigan on the road. Those are some landmines.
Tough.
Right? If you want to take a look at Penn State, they get Oregon at home, road games at Ohio State and Michigan State. Like, those are... Ohio State's certainly a lot tougher, but Michigan State, could they be better than they were last year?
Who's more of an unknown, UW or Michigan State?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of questions of both. If you're looking at Michigan has Oklahoma on the road, Nebraska on the road.
I expect Michigan to struggle mightily in that.
USC on the road, Michigan State on the road.
I think they'll struggle against USC. I think they'll struggle against Oklahoma. I might be a little high on the Sooners for bias reasons.
And then if you're looking at the two wild cards in Illinois and Indiana. Indiana has Illinois at home in week four, on the road at Iowa. They've got a bye. Here's where if you're an Oregon fan, you're like, I'm not worried about Indiana. Indiana's coming off a bye.
That's big. And who does Oregon play the week before?
Oregon has they're both coming off byes.
Oh, okay.
There you go. Perfect. I looked at it. I thought it was a step up.
Who's scared now? Yeah. Not me.
No, this is perfect. I'm an idiot. I looked the schedule wrong.
Yes. Indiana last year had a tremendous season. They lost once in the regular season. Mm-hmm. But go back and look at that schedule and who they played.
I will say, though, Indiana does have...
FIU, Western Illinois,
a lot of talent.
UCLA, Charlotte, Maryland, mm-hmm. Northwestern, Nebraska, Washington, Michigan State, Michigan, which was down after mm-hmm. winning the title. They got blown out by Ohio State and beat Purdue.
That was their one loss, right? Yeah. Their one loss was Ohio State.
They had that is a super soft schedule. And and they rode that into the playoff, which is exactly what Kurt Cignetti's point was that we talked about earlier.
And they lost their first playoff game.
Yeah. And they got beat by Notre Dame.
And the thing is with Indiana, so you have there. I always like to find the chunk of the schedule. Like this is the chunk of the schedule.
Like week 7 through 9 or something.
Yeah. So for Indiana, they have Iowa on the road by a road game at Oregon, and they have the home game before that at Illinois. After that, it's Michigan State at home, UCLA at home, Maryland on the road. But then they have Penn State on the road, Wisconsin at home, and finish up with at Purdue. Illinois, they have that week 4 game on the road in Indiana. They have USC at home, Ohio State at home, Washington on the road, and they finish up with Wisconsin on the road at home at Northwestern. So, like, there's these, like, little landmines for basically everyone else. If you're talking about the teams that have the best, like, USC schedule is not great. They have a Penn State, and then Michigan State, then Maryland, then Indiana, their bye, then Nebraska, Ohio State, Washington. I'm sorry, that's UCLA. They've got Michigan State, Illinois, Michigan, Notre Dame, Nebraska, and then Northwestern. And then they finish with Iowa, Oregon, UCLA.
Oh, there's no Stanford.
No.
I forgot about that.
Not there. Not there anymore.
I don't like that.
Yeah, it's a little weird. But like if you're looking at the teams, you're like, okay, who could do the most? You start with number one talent, but number two, you look at schedule. And Oregon has
– friendly.
A very friendly schedule this year, with the exception, obviously, of the Penn State.
It's going to be very hard to have a Big Ten schedule, even though you don't play everybody. It's going to be very hard to have a Big Ten schedule going forward without having one road landmine.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Oregon's is the biggest of the year in Penn State on a whiteout, nighttime, on NBC.
TV,
like
everybody's watching.
That's pretty stacked against you.
That was always a thing, even in the Pac-12. You'd go play that Friday night game in Tucson.
Going down to Tempe and just getting, smacked around.
Yeah, it's the same thing.
Who wants to go to Utah on a Friday night? Yeah. UCLA on a Saturday night.
I can tell you right now, as a USC guy, I want to go to Utah.
Yeah, no, not at all.
That place is a house of horrors. Screw that place.
All right, coming up at...
Wait, did you say horrors?
Yes.
Horrors?
Yeah, they don't have the other ones in Utah.
It's not the horrors.
Oh, sure they do, but you got to look a little harder.
All right, we come back. We'll pivot a little way. We'll do web gems as we're looking at maybe every day at 11:45. Who knows? We're still figuring out. That's Danny Morang. I'm Patrick Harris. This is Portland Sports Leader 105.1, The Fan.
Sometimes it's good.
Aw, I've interrupted happy time.
Sometimes it's bad.
Ow, son of a...
It's web gems.
What'd you do?
The firm of Harris and Morang on the Fan Sports Network, 105.1 and 1080, The Fan.
As there's a drive in a deep left field by Castellanos, it will be a home run.
Coming up in the noon o'clock hour of the show, I keep teasing this, big day for us. Dan Lanning will hit the podium around 12:15. We will air that live for you. We'll cut to the Big Ten Network and hear what he's got to say. We'll have a little bit of reactions, and we'll wrap up and we'll go home because this is the greatest 3 hours of my life ever created.
Super nice.
Super nice. Super nice. I'm going to go to the gym today.
Are you?
Look out,
folks.
Look at you. P. Harris is trying to live a healthy lifestyle.
I'm going straight to the gym.
I didn't really drink that much last night.
That's helpful for the body.
Yeah.
I think I'm just now getting...
I get that it's that much.
Well, I'm just now getting the remnants of Vegas out of my body.
Like, yeah?
It's just now finally gone. And it's just, Tyson was like, you can't do too much, da-da-da-da-da, and I'm just like...
Hold my beer.
Whole body.
Hold my mojito.
Yes, you can. You absolutely can. I promise you... That is on the table.
My wife said to me the other day, she said, old preschool, she looked at me and she goes, what I still can't believe, Patrick? And I was like, what's that, baby? And she goes, the fact that you have let Danny off this long without destroying him, that his drink is a mojito.
Oh, no.
She is mad at me that I'm not mad at you.
I don't care
about that.
I don't care.
No, what she should be mad about is the way that he prefers mint in some instances, but not others.
It's like toothpaste a mojito.
For him, it's only mojitos or lamb. Outside of that, he doesn't like mint.
No, I don't. You won't see me getting mint ice cream.
Oh, it's so good. Mint chocolate chip ice cream.
No, it's not. It's
Junior Mints. They're chocolate. No. They're peppermint. They can be very refreshing.
Dude, and if they're cold. Like at a movie theater?
Yeah, cool. Frozen toothpaste.
The Junior Mint, that is my movie theater candy of choice is the Junior Mint.
Me too. I'm not a big candy. I'm not a big sweet guy. So if I do at a movie theater, it's Junior Mint.
I have a sweet tooth.
I'm shocked, Rust.
Yeah, right?
I'm shocked.
Yeah. Look at me. I have a tooth for everything pretty much.
I have decided this. It's official. Cal Raleigh is the MVP of the American League. And points were proved last night. The Milwaukee Brewers are the hottest team in baseball.
They were.
So funny. Joe and I would talk about this all the time. The Brewers started kind of cold, and we were like, they're not going to do this again, are they? Here the Brewers are doing Brewers things. Pat Murphy, maybe one of the more underrated managers in baseball. But a big game. Logan Gilbert on the bump, Woodruff on the bump. All you need is one run in sometimes of these games, and that's Cal Raleigh stepping up to the plate. And look, Aaron Judge batting over 300, going to hit 50-plus bombs. I get it. And this is not a fatigue MVP thing like the NBA can do. I am a firm believer. If you are the MVP, you can win seven like Barry Bonds did. I got no problem
hate narrative stuff. Like, if you're the best, it's like LeBron should have won more. Like, that's...
Without a doubt.
If you're
the MVP, you're the MVP. Like, and
the Jokic thing this year. Like, if you want to say SGA is MVP,
I'd have voted for Jokic.
I would have given it for Jokic. Why? Because he had a better season than he even had when he had his unbelievable season. It's like, but... Again, to your point, I am a firm believer if you're the best player on the planet, you're the best player on the planet, that's the most valuable.
But I'm not always that.
I am.
I am not always the best player with the best stats gets the MVP. If there are two guys that are really coming around and being hot, in this case, Cal Raleigh and Aaron Judge, I'm going to vote for the guy that is bailing out his team more. Now, you could sit here and argue and say, well, Aaron Judge is over 300 batting average and his home runs are carrying that Yankee lineup. I agree. Cal Raleigh is literally... carrying this lineup and showed it last night.
Well, yeah, I mean,
unforgettable seasons do. If I feel like we're at a tiebreaker here, and my tiebreaker is going to go to the unbelievable season to one guy, and whose team needs him more.
Well, yeah,
although it's funny to say because the Yankees would be really bad without Aaron Judge.
They'd be
really bad without Aaron Judge.
Well, the crazy thing is now Cal Raleigh is 9 home runs away from breaking the all-time record for most home runs by a catcher.
Yeah. It's great. He's going to get it.
With how many games left?
He's going to get it.
70?
Maybe a little less than 70.
67?
I'd have to look at somebody's record and do some math, which I'm not going to do because I'm terrible at it.
But Salvi Perez has got the record at 48.
2 years ago? Yeah. Last year, what was it?
I think it's 21. Yeah, it's 21.
Okay, so 3-4 years ago. Yeah. Got it.
But again,
I think 61 games remaining in the season.
She's got to hit 9 in 61.
Which he's going
54
to.
And 54 and 47.
The question is can he hit 29 in 60 games?
Yeah, and really get up there?
If Cal Raleigh hits 60 home runs, give him the MVP.
That's the thing about this.
Could you not?
Because Aaron Judge has 59,
I don't
61,
care.
I don't know.
Those damn Yankees.
But it's also, like, if you want to make the argument, like, if you can say the best player.
Is Aaron Judge carrying the Yankees like Cal Raleigh is carrying the Mariners?
I think that's the argument you could make, that the answer might be yes.
Even if you take this out of it.
I think it's more Cal Raleigh, but I think you could make the argument that Aaron Judge is carrying that offense.
Forget the carrying part of it.
The New York Yankees.
They're bad, dude.
Forget the carrying part of it. Who's a better player?
Aaron Judge.
Cal Raleigh's probably the best defensive catcher in baseball.
He did win the Platinum Glove last year.
Pretty darn good switch hitter as well.
He is a switch hitter.
So where's the flaw in his game?
Fifth inning of the World Series last year didn't look good for Aaron Judge. Well,
where is Aaron Judge rank in the pantheon of outfielders in baseball?
Average.
Okay. So if the offense isn't that much more, and the defense is that much more at a position that is significantly more demanding.
Also, currently, there's only a 2-game difference between those New York Yankees and the Seattle Mariners.
Also, he calls the games for all the starters.
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
The demand is significantly higher. The impact that Cal Raleigh has on 9 innings is significantly greater than Aaron Judge.
This is tough. Aaron Judge is batting like 340.
Look, I'm not arguing that Aaron Judge isn't fantastic.
I'm like walking back my own opinion.
You are.
What the hell is wrong with me?
I'm very familiar with the catcher dynamic because I will sit here and talk about Yadier Molina being the best defensive catcher in modern baseball.
Oh, totally. I'm with you on that.
And I didn't care if he hit 200.
Neither did they.
Because he was so good defensively and he was so good for that staff, it did not matter. Raleigh is almost approaching that level of defensive ability.
Do the Seattle Mariners also have a Cody Bellinger, a Jazz Chisholm, a Giancarlo Stanton.
All three of those guys are underperforming.
And Anthony Volpe.
And they would still all be the second best player on the Mariners by a lot.
By a country mile.
I'd still take Julio.
In the long run, sure. But if you're talking about like what their careers are, not even close.
You guys make me sick. Changing Sorry, my own opinions.
I'm riding the big dumper.
I can't believe that I was like, I'm voting for Cal Raleigh. And then it's like, well, Aaron Judge is pretty good.
But look, I want to, especially, it's the most demanding position in baseball is catcher.
Without a doubt.
So
you No argument there.
So you put that in there. You say the offense, he's the second best offensive player in the American League. Okay? Mm-hmm. So he's the best defensive player in baseball right now. He's the second best offensive player.
But he's a really average hitter.
Okay. But as far as production, driving production the ball in and hitting the ball of the fence.
Production is there.
When you put those two together, the last time we had this, because Piazza wasn't that good defensively. Pudge?
Steroids.
But still. But I'm saying the last time we had this, Buster?
Buster.
Buster, but Buster wasn't this good offensively.
Yeah, all those perfect games and no-hitters that were thrown in the in that four-year span in San Francisco, Buster's not all of them.
No.
There's other catchers playing.
So when you put those two things together, again, I'm not Mariners honk, but like when you talk about the
Joe Mauer's the same as Buster. Not the most amazing defensive catcher.
But I mean, like,
that's probably Pudge.
But that's the thing is, like, you're talking about a guy who is the best defensive catcher in baseball. And you, and it's not just he's the best defensive catcher. He might be one of the best defensive players in baseball.
Thanks for proving my point, guys.
I'm with you.
Yeah.
I'm with you. Like, no, I think we look at the slash lines too much.
Too much.
Because, especially when you're talking about outfielders, just like, how many plays are they asked to make on average in a game? 3.5? 4.5?
In theory, you could sit in left field and touch the ball zero times.
That's what I mean. That's why he's parked out there.
Well, yeah. And literally, again, let's go back to this. If Cal Raleigh is not hitting in that Mariners lineup, who else is?
Oh.
If Aaron Judge is not hitting in the Yankees lineup, who else is? There's several candidates there.
I think they would both be in very big trouble, but the Mariners are like 30 wins right now, 25 wins
and
right now.
That, to me, is what defines a most valuable player.
Well, you heard it here. Danny Meringue and Jeff Rust proving my points right. Mm-hmm. That's what we do here. That's what we
text line comparing Cal Raleigh defense to Yachty, LOL. I'm not doing that. I'm talking about the ask.
Oh, I think there's something there. I'm okay with that. Yachty did it over a whole career, yeah. But I mean, Cal was shown as the best defensive player in baseball last year at catcher. I think it's okay to compare. I mean, I'll take Yachty.
I mean,
career-wise, yes. Of course. But I think it's okay to compare.
But if again, you're talking about the output. If you're going to be, like last year, the best defensive player in baseball while also having this level of offensive output, we really haven't seen this in modern baseball. Pudge being the exception.
And he was on roids.
Which I don't care about.
I do. Don't get me started. I know. On that. All right, we come back. We'll give a little space as Dan Lanning should hit the podium at 12:15 on the Big Ten Network. We'll go over to that. A little more Ducks talk. Loaded third hour. Don't go anywhere. The Firm on 105.1 The Fan.